You've probably wondered, as you've been stuck in traffic inching through the Holland Tunnel, over the Kosciuszko Bridge, or along the Van Wyck Expressway, who Holland, Kosciuszko, and Van Wyck were, or whether they should be pronounced Kosciuszko and Van Wyck, or is it Van Wyck? So we decided to devote this week's Please Explain to finding out. And joining us now are Kenneth T. Jackson, the Jacques Barzin Professor in History and the Social Sciences at Columbia University, and Lisa Keller, Associate Professor of History at SUNY Purchase. They are both editors of the Encyclopedia of New York City, published by Yale University Press. It's now in its second edition, and it's also available as a Kindle e-book. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having us, Leonard. I want to say from the start that there's no way that Lisa and I could know everything about New York City. We've got a very, very big book here.
So, thank you for having us, Leonard. And yes, I endorse what Ken is saying. We'll try our best, but I'm afraid there are a lot of very smart New Yorkers out there who know a lot about the city.
And we'll be taking calls later at 646-829, or people can leave comments on our show page at WMYC.org if you have a question, or if you know the answer. And Kenneth and Lisa don't. Zuccotti Park is in the news almost every day now that it's the home of Occupy Wall Street. And I assumed at first that it was named after John Zuccotti, the husband of Geraldine Ferraro. But was I wrong?
Yeah, well, you were. But I have to tell you, Leonard, I thought the same thing for a while. It was named after another John Zuccotti, who happens to be president of Brookfield Properties. And John Zuccotti also has a career in city government. He had been a city official for quite some time. He'd been on the City Planning Commission. In fact, he was even chairman of that commission. And he had also been a first deputy mayor under Abe Beame. And he'd been chairman of the Real Estate Board. So it wasn't surprising. But I think the reason they named it after him, the park had existed before that. It was built in 1968. And originally named Liberty Plaza Park when U.S. Steel built the building. And in 2006, they did a big renovation, and I think they put in about $8 million, and that's when they renamed it after John Zuccotti.
Although he does seem rather obscure to have a whole park named after him. But a number of the people who we're going to be talking about seem rather obscure now. But maybe they were more famous in their time, and probably
Zuccotti Park would have been obscure had not the Occupy Wall Street protesters landed on it.
I understand that I didn't say the phone number clearly enough, so let me try that again: 646-829-3985. Since it's near Wall Street, I wonder about if it's true that I've heard Wall Street was named for a wall that was once there?
Well, it's hard to believe now, Leonard, but that was the northern edge of the city about 1653 when there was a wall along Wall Street. Mercifully, and it was not a very impressive wall, not one of these great big stone things that you can imagine surrounded Constantinople or Malta or somewhere like that, but rather a crummy little wall. And good thing for the settlers that neither the Indians nor the British ever attacked from the north, because it wouldn't have held many people back.
Should I assume that there was a canal at Canal Street?
Well, you know, it's important to remember that New York was founded by the Dutch. I mean, most of us don't remember that, but the Dutch really left their stamp on the city in many ways, its diversity, its toleration. But they wanted it to look a little bit like their home country in canals. And canal was actually, it was a way to drain some of the waterways. But Broad Street, right in front of the Stock Exchange, was a canal. That's why it's wider. And it looked a lot like canals in Amsterdam.
And did they extend? Well, Canal Street didn't extend the full length of Canal Street today.
It didn't, but by the way, somebody else can probably call in on this one, but I'm pretty sure the Canal Street was partly drained to drain some of the swamps.
Yeah, there were a huge number of swamps in the area, including the one that was sort of at Five Points, Mulberry Bend, where Chinatown is. They had a lot of problems with swampy territory, which is going to come up in some of this discussion today of some of the named places.
Well, it's interesting that the Dutch filled in the swamps But they also did a lot of landfill and extended southern Manhattan, despite the fact that they had all of the rest of the island available to them.
Well, you know, we forget that hundreds of years ago, you had to walk everywhere you were going. I mean, to have a horse was much more than to have a private limousine today. So you mean you had to go on your own 2 feet. So people are going to huddle together in a really serious way, so that the city was crowded, and they preferred to kind of extend it out a little bit. And I don't want to dominate this conversation, but the thing that's unusual about New York or Manhattan is it expanded in little bitty pieces, whereas Boston was in a big jump, or in Chicago, if you think around Grant Park, they suddenly filled in enormously big areas, except for the World Trade Center area, or more appropriately, Battery Park City, where it's 92 acres. Most of New York would be filled in as the tide would go down. People would then throw more and more dirt or whatever, or broken boats or whatever, and slowly fill it up. So it would almost like inch out. But the island as we know it now is much bigger than the island as the Dutch know it.
Now, Lisa, should we assume that the Holland Tunnel was named after the Dutch?
You know, as a child, that's what I was always told, but I'm sorry to tell you that's not true. It was named for the engineer who built it, a guy named Clifford Holland. And as is wont to happen in these cases, the poor guy died before it was finished, so I guess they felt they could do him justice by naming it for him. It opened in 1927, and at the time was the longest tunnel in the world.
Was his design especially innovative?
Yeah, it was. It had this incredible exhaust system. They were really very nervous about this, and the story is they ran a couple of thousand tests to try to figure out how to get the exhaust gases out of it. There are four ventilating buildings which have fans that blow air in and have exhaust that takes the air out. So I guess that's why we don't all suffocate when we go through the tunnel.
With some of the other places that confuse people is the Kosciuszko Bridge and the street in Brooklyn, or as New Yorkers pronounce it, often Kosciuszko, named after a Polish general who fought in the American Revolution?
Well, not so much. Is it America? Is it the American Revolution? I guess maybe it was then. I'm not certain about Kosciuszko.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it the American Revolution?
The Revolutionary War. But they didn't actually name it till 1940. I don't know why
after,
it took so long.
Maybe, it was originally known, I think, as the Meeker Avenue Bridge, and then they named after Kosciuszko.
But maybe nobody wanted the name because of all the traffic jams.
Well, maybe that's it, you know. Of course, if that were the case, it'd be maybe that's why we haven't named the Cross Bronx Expressway after anyone yet.
Well, we could name it after Robert Moses and curse every time we
seriously, I think it's amazing that we don't name anything after Robert Moses, who built so many of things in New York.
Now,
we've named things for him outside the city, but not so much in the city.
Who was Major Deegan?
Well, you know, I think that's a sad one. I mean, it's not that Major Deegan probably wasn't a perfectly nice person who was a kind of a local politico. But when you consider how important the Deegan Expressway is and how huge it is in our history. He was an architect. He was a political leader. He lived around the turn of the century. He was a major in the engineers. He was a Democrat. He was from the Bronx. But, you know, you would think that he won the Medal of Honor, you know, leading his outnumbered troops up a hill, but he wasn't. I mean, we have real heroes in the New York area. Major Deegan was not a hero, and if I were the dictator, I'd immediately erase that name from that road.
My guests are Kenneth T. Jackson, the Jacques Barzin Professor in History and the Social Sciences at Columbia University, Editor-in-Chief of the Encyclopedia of New York City, and I guess tempted to write Major Deegan out of that encyclopedia. Lisa Keller, Associate Professor of History at SUNY Purchase, Executive Editor of the second edition of the Encyclopedia of New York City, which is published by Yale University Press and is also available in e-book form for Kindles. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Listeners are already writing in all sorts of questions. Some of them I was prepared to ask, like, who is Van Wyck, or is it Van Wyck?
Well, you know, by the way, the answer is I do not know, but I've heard it, you know, listen to the traffic forecasts all the time, and they are seem to me now saying Van Wyck more. It used to be Van Wyck. Anyway, the person he was and why it's named after him is that he was the first mayor of New York after the Great Consolidation. You know, history is boring. It can be boring if you make people remember a lot of dates and places. But one date that is really pivotal in New York's history is 1898, which is when, you know, essentially Queens and Staten Island and Brooklyn and the Bronx and Manhattan come together to form really the greatest city in the world. At that time, it would have been London, but it would soon enough become New York. And it's at that moment that it's so very important. That's such a critical moment in New York's history. I think we need to remember it.
Lisa, who was Bruckner?
I want to make one comment about Van
Wyck. And he was the first mayor of the greater city. I'm sorry, I didn't finish that sentence.
No, I wanted to make a comment about Van Wyck.
Oh, you say Van Wyck. Okay.
I'm a native New Yorker here, Leonard. I mean, you know, this is how I grew up saying Van Wyck. But it's very hard to have a sense of humor about the Van Wyck, but I call attention to all the listeners to the great Seinfeld episode about the Van Wyck. And I don't think there are too many comedy shows that talk about the Van Wyck when Elaine is trying to dump a boyfriend and get him to the airport, and she's driving and driving, and she gets back, and she's a wreck, and her hair's falling out, and she starts narrating what happens, and she says, I did this, I did that. And then I got to the Van Wyck. It's everybody's denouement.
Yeah, we've all been stuck there. I don't think and that once was just a roadway. They broadened it to make that expressway. If anything, they brought more traffic to it.
That's right. And it was the early 50s to connect the airport because, you know, this was the big hub. This is New York was becoming the transportation hub in the Northeast.
So who was Bruckner?
Bruckner was a Bronx Borough president and a state legislator and a commissioner of public works and a congressman, but he was also a bottler, and he got his fame as opening up a bottling plant. But he had some political issues surrounding him, so I think it makes naming the road after him even more problematic. And I know that's a subject that Ken loves to talk about, who we choose to name our roads and bridges and byways after. This is one that is a little bit questionable.
Well, I'm assuming that we can expect to see a Marty Markowitz highway sometime soon.
All the great people and important figures in New York City's history who are not memorialized, and to memorialize somebody like Bruckner, you know, it doesn't, you know, it does not do justice or honor to our history, I think.
What about Goethals Bridge?
Well, Goethals Bridge, I'm trying to think. Lisa, do you remember that one?
Well, Goethals himself is very famous for being the Panama Canal engineer. But he's not the one who engineered the actual Goethals Bridge. It's named after him, but there's his friend Waddle. Now, Waddle designs a lot of stuff in New York. He also did the Outer Bridge and stuff like that. So, again, here's a case of naming for somebody who probably is, we would consider him a technocrat, but at the time he's being given credit for doing this. That's, I don't know, maybe it's payback, political payback or something.
Let's take a call from Janet from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yes, I'm from Manhattan now, but I was from the Bronx. So I'm wondering, who was Moshaloo of Moshaloo Parkway?
You know, I don't know that. I do not know the answer. I don't know if I've certainly been on the Moshaloo many times as I'm heading either down the Sawmill River Parkway or going to somewhere like the Jacoby Hospital and somewhere like that. Now, we do not have everything in the encyclopedia, much because even then it's 10 pages long. But Moshaloo, at least the neighborhood, it's from an Algonquin name, which probably translates as smooth stones or small stones. And that's both the Moshaloo and Moshaloo Parkway in the same area. And that information is coming from Gary Hermelin, who's the head of the Bronx County Historical Society, so I guess he knows.
Well, this is another one of those places that has a number of pronunciations. Many people say Moshaloo.
Yeah.
So I guess this has led to a lot of confusion, as we've seen with Houston Street.
true. I mean, I'm a Southerner. I always thought that was Sam Houston. But Houston Street was named before Sam Houston was anybody knew who he was.
As I understand it, it was named after somebody who spelled his name Haustien, and the spelling changed, not the pronunciation.
Yeah, that's correct. And the reason that the guy's name was even used was because he happened to marry the daughter of a guy named Nicholas Bayard. And Bayard was a big-shot New Yorker politico.
He got his own street.
I mean, that's how you name things. If you go to around the corner in the suburbs where I live, there's a street called Andrea Lane. It was named after the developer's daughter. People were no different 200 years ago. They named things after their relatives or people like that. But it's interesting because as time went on, we began to name after politicians, and not just politicians, but certain kind of politicians particularly, which will come up further.
What about Outerbridge Crossing? It seems like it's named after its location between New Jersey and Staten Island, but isn't it also named after a person?
Yeah, and again, it's sort of a semi-political thing. Eugenius Outerbridge, who was the first chairman of the Port Authority, and I suppose you could argue that the Port Authority, which is sort of the grand tri-state area body that governs all kinds of movement and transportation, is an esteemed organization, but I don't know how many people had ever heard of Eugenius Outerbridge.
I never did. I always assumed
it was going into
the rest of the country.
You assume it's because it's the outermost bridge in the city that somehow that's what it's got to do with, but it's not.
We have to take a little break, and we'll come back with our listeners who are invited to call us at 646-829-3985, or they can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guests are Lisa Keller, Associate Professor of History at SUNY Purchase, and Kenneth T. Jackson, Jacques Barzin, Professor of History and the Social Sciences at Columbia University. Stay with us for more. And we're back with our Please Explain guests, Kenneth T. Jackson and Lisa Keller. We're talking about how some of the mysteriously named places in New York got their names, and taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And let's go to Paul from New Jersey. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Good afternoon. The question is, how did the Throg's Neck Bridge get named? I have no idea what a Throg's Neck is.
Well, let me just say, first of all, that the Throg's Neck has an important place in American history because during the American Revolution, as George Washington and the Americans were really getting the heck beaten out of them by the British, and the British very narrowly cut us off and trapped George Washington's. First of all, they could have trapped it on Brooklyn, and then they could have trapped it Manhattan. Anyway, the area derives its name from John Throgmorton, who was an Englishman whom the Dutch allowed in 1642 to settle in the area. So I don't know how Throg's Neck comes from Throgmorton, but that's it. But its significance comes from George Washington and his lucky escape from the British and the Hessians in the fall of 1776. And now, of course, the Throg's Neck Bridge and below it, Fort Schuyler and the State University of New York's Maritime College.
Thank you so much for calling us, Paul.
Thank you.
A lot of listeners have asked this, but I'll read the one from Mario in Washington Heights. What's the story with renaming bridges and roads? The Queensboro Bridge is named after Ed Koch, the Triborough after Robert F. Kennedy. Has there ever been a political movement to rename these things, whatever they were called, the first time?
Well, first of all, I do have a feeling about this. I rather like it when bridges and roads have names that sort of explain what they really are, like the West Side Highway, or the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, or the Cross Bronx Expressway, or the Williamsburg Bridge. And then if you're going to rename it, it seems to me that it ought to be a little more of a transparent process. I think Robert F. Kennedy was really a great American and a great man, but precious little to do with New York City, only lived here a few years. And when you think of all the people who are not memorialized, like a guy named Andrew Haswell Green, who actually brought the city together, or, you know, we could think of a lot of names. It'd be interesting what people think, who people we ought to remember. But it's really a very political process, with mostly within the city government and the city council. Most of it doesn't matter. We name a little street for a firefighter who died in the World Trade Center. That's wonderful. And it's kind of honorific. We keep the old name, but we have that name below it. But in something like bridges, those some names stick and some names don't. Major Deegan sticks. Joe DiMaggio doesn't really stick very well on the West Side Highway. Avenue of the Americas doesn't stick. Sixth Avenue does. Sometimes it's what sticks. But anyway, I do not think the Triborough Bridge should have been named for Robert F. Kennedy, and I think they should have put it up for more of a consideration. Ed Koch has a better claim to the Queensborough Bridge. I mean, he certainly was a significant figure in New York City's history, and one could make that argument.
But his connection is to the village. We could have given him a little pocket park, couldn't we?
Well, that's true. I mean, there's... Well, as Lisa, I think, made a good point. We tend to remember politicians, and yet when we think of why New York is important in the history of the world and the present today, it's not politicians that jump out at us. It's other people who have made contributions. So why do we only memorialize mostly politicians?
Let's go to another call. Lee from Teaneck, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I actually heard that the Lincoln Tunnel, where everyone assumes it's named after Abraham Lincoln, is not named after Abraham Lincoln.
Well, let me
who was
just
it named after? Michael Lincoln?
This. I thought it was.
Joe Lincoln?
I can't remember who they said it was actually named after.
I hope it was
after,
Leonard Lincoln.
I was told that people assume that because of the GW Bridge, mm-hmm. and they just assume that they named it after two presidents.
Well, I must say I'm standing corrected on this, and I'm reading the entry on the Lincoln Tunnel in the Encyclopedia of New York City, and we do not explain how it took its name, and probably that's because everybody always assumed it was named after Abraham Lincoln. So if it's not named after him, it's not a well-known fact, that's for sure.
Well, thank you for your call, and maybe somebody can check into it and find out for sure. Let's go over some of the other places that people are confused by. Tompkins Square Park, for example.
Yeah, Tompkins Square Park is one of my favorites. I have a chapter about it in a book I wrote. That's named after a governor, Daniel Tompkins. But again, it was not the original name. It was originally called Clinton Square. And
named after a Clinton.
Named after another old New York name. But the interesting thing was, at the time when it became Tompkins Square, it was owned by John Jacob Astor, and it was swampland. It was 10.5 acres of swampland, and he made a very hefty profit on it. He sold it for over $90,000, and the city bought it in 1834, made it into a square. It was a big marshy ground for snipe hunting, but its importance lies in the fact that on the 1811 grid, there were only three places left open. And in the days of Zuccotti Park, we need to pay attention to this, because the reason people have to go to Zuccotti is there's nowhere else to go. Tompkins Square was designated an open space on that grid, could never be sold off, and could not be developed.
But you could not stay there after midnight now, could you?
No, right now, no, not right now. But the fact is that there are many, many places in New York that were open spaces that eventually were developed. Bloomingdale Square, Hamilton Square, Hudson Square, Delancey Square. And they were also, the city said, we need to have commercial development. We're going to sell it off. But Tompkins Square could never be sold off.
And
Tompkins Square is not just the names and titles that are contested. It's the use of the space. For generations, Tompkins Square has been almost a war zone. And back in the 1970s and 80s, there was a big homeless encampment on the south end of the park. And then as the gentrification began to happen around it, mothers pushing their baby carriages were uncomfortable with drug dealers at the south. Now Tompkins Square Park is mostly cleared of, let's say, drug dealing or people spending the night, but that has not always been the case.
Now, I always assumed Madison Square Park was named after James Madison, but I don't know if it is.
No, it is. It is. That is.
But what about some of the others? You mentioned Bloomingdale Park. What
else? Well, they don't exist anymore. Oh. They were done away with. But that was from the Bloomingdale family, which was, again, an old New York name. And, of course, it was Bloomingdale Road, which is... All of these places were engineered out with traffic when they opened streets, and they needed to sell off land, and they just removed all these things.
But you know, I think it's a little known fact, Leonard, and Lisa wrote about this in a book called Triumph of Order, is the lack of public open space in New York for public demonstrations. We all assume that it's there, but one of the reasons the protesters are in Zuccotti Park is it actually in no New York City park, nor in any New York City place, can you just willy-nilly have a demonstration, unlike a place like London, where you can do this. You know, Lisa's written a lot about it, but it's really something that most New Yorkers are not aware of.
Yeah, at one time, Union Square Park was a place where people protested, but in fact, it's named after the unions that... had offices around it, isn't it?
No. Actually, that's not true. Union Square, sorry, Leonard, Union Square.
It's okay. I stand to, that's why we do these Please Explains.
Union Square Park was named after the conjunction of streets that happened to meet there.
That confuse everyone.
But not even the Union Army of War, I mean the Civil War.
Yeah, and actually it's used for a lot of purposes in which the word union comes in. Yeah, unions go there to demonstrate, and yeah, the big Civil War celebration for the Union is there, but it was just a whole bunch of streets that came together, and that's how it became Union Square.
You mentioned Astor. Is Astoria, a listener asks, named after the Astors?
Yeah, they made a bad investment on that one. The local land holders had hopes that John Jacob Astor was going to come in and really invest a ton of money to make sure that this became a great neighborhood. But all he gave was $500. He invested $500. You know, he dies the wealthiest man in America. And the locals gave up, and a local guy named Halsey, who was also a fur trader, which is an ironic coincidence.
And he got his own street.
And he's the one who said, well, I'll just do this because Astor's not going to do it. But they never changed the name. They kept it Astoria. The original name, by the way, was Hallett's Cove.
Now, Bob in Manhattan says, I was told that the original name for the Hudson River was the New River.
One of the names was the North River. I don't know about the New River, but you can check that one too. But definitely North River, other than Henry Hudson.
And then I always wondered why we have the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. Why was it named after Verrazano rather than America's Vespucci or Henry Hudson, for that matter?
Well, we got the river named for Hudson now. But Verrazano was here before. Giovanni di Verrazano came in 1524 and comes through what's called the Narrows, that really essentially 1 mile gap between Staten Island and Brooklyn, and sails through. And then when Robert Moses builds the bridge and opens in 1964, it seems appropriate to call the, because they didn't have anything else named after Verrazano, but Henry Hudson does. And then all the half moon bars in New York are named after his ship. So,
should I assume that all of those neighborhoods like Carroll Gardens or Ditmas Park or Jackson Heights or Inwood or Morningside Heights are named after people?
No, I don't think you should assume that. I think, the problem is that New York not only has 450 separate neighborhoods, it really is a series of neighborhoods, but also we create new neighborhoods and others die. Hell's Kitchen, really defunct, Five Points.
Where did Hell's Kitchen come from? Where did it get that name?
Well, first of all, there's no correct answer to this, but the legend that presumably has lasted the longest is it was policemen talking to each other, and it's, you know, hot in the kitchen, and if you can't, you know, if you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. It's sort of that same sort of thing. It was a neighborhood of vice and tough neighborhood for a long time. But there are other legends about how it gets its name. But it's a tough neighborhood. It's just not like, you know, wooded acre shores or something like this that a developer would think. Hell's Kitchen referred to the toughness of the place.
Well, now it's called Clinton.
And it's not used anymore.
It's called Clinton, and the neighborhood below it is called Chelsea. Of course, there was a newspaper called the Chelsea Clinton News, which some people thought was named after the president's daughter.
But do we know where Chelsea comes from? Is that just England, the English neighborhood being?
I think that's a derivation from the English neighborhood. That's where that came from. You know, the name change. You know, Carroll. You mentioned Carroll Gardens. That was a renaming, like Hell's Kitchen. A lot of this renaming reflects real estate development in the hope that by renaming these neighborhoods, they're being gentrified, real estate is in demand. A name change is going to make things a lot better. People are going to want to move there and live there. So hopefully things will improve, and that goes along with the name change.
Well, hasn't that worked with Tribeca, with Nolita, with
sure.
Soho,
yeah,
with Cobble places. Hill, Sunnyside Gardens, Jackson Heights?
Well, I think the number of neighborhoods has proliferated in there. Chelsea, by the way, was a name just designated by the person who owned it, a retired British Army captain who decided to name it Chelsea in 1750. But I think those are the kind of stories you find. Sometimes somebody just made it up. Sometimes it's an Indian name. Sometimes it's, Soho, south of Houston. Everybody's now trying to think of these cute names so that we can all duplicate the financial success. And who would have thought the meatpacking district would become, or the High Line is now almost becoming a neighborhood itself. I mean, it's not just the High Line. It's let's go down to the High Line. I mean, the area.
The listeners have also asked about the Whitestone Bridge. One person wondered if it was pronounced the Whitstone Bridge.
Well, my favorite story about the Whitestone Bridge, and really it speaks to, in some ways, the efficiency of Robert Moses, was that the Whitestone Bridge, which opens, in 1939, connecting, of course, the Bronx and Queens, comes in on time, actually months earlier, and under budget. I think it comes from the... it's a neighborhood in Queens. I've got that information somewhere, but I assume it's the same name connected to the Whitestone Expressway. And who does it say?
Well, I'm assuming that within 10 years or so, it's going to be called the Bloomberg Bridge.
Probably so. Well, the nice thing about the amazing thing about the Whitestone Bridge, not only on early and under budget, but it's in relatively good shape. I'm reminded of the Tappan Zee Bridge, which was not built until the 1950s, which is in serious danger of falling down.
We haven't touched on so many others. People want to know about Skirmerhorn and DeKalb and lots of other places, but we have pretty much run out of time. But this is a fascinating subject, and maybe we can return to it sometime and find out about some of the other places.
And I think of all the people who ought to be commemorated. Have the listeners tell us who they think ought to be remembered, let's say, for the Whitestone Bridge.
Kenneth T. Jackson is the Jacques Barzin Professor of History and Social Sciences at Columbia University. And Lisa Keller is Associate Professor of History at SUNY Purchase. Both of them have worked on the Encyclopedia of New York City. Thank you so much. Mario Batali stops by on Monday's show to share some of his favorite seasonal recipes, and we will also look at how opioid-based painkillers like OxyContin accounted for a small number of prescriptions decades ago but now are frequently abused by drug addicts, and Jeff Charlotte on his profiles of religious radicals, realists, and atheists, plus Nancy Ellen Abrams and Joel Primack on their attempt to reconcile science and religion. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neshick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. And we had help today from Andrea Foles, William Miesmer, and Sarah Walter. Andrew Dunn was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week.